We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in good stead. Through a history of starvation and times of want and woe, wheat has been our savior, our grub, our goulash dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when there's not enough wheat. We feed you.
Hi, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission. Welcome to Episode 1 of the new Wheat All About It podcast. Wheat is a miracle plant, and if you're interested in wheat and the forces that affect the wheat industry, then you've come to the right place. Wheat All About It includes interviews, presentations, and yes, even my musings about our favorite crop. And please visit our Facebook page where I will post items including photographs of speakers, PowerPoint slides from presentations, as well as information about contests. Search for Wheat All About It. In this inaugural episode of Wheat All About It, listen in as Chandler Gould introduces himself as the CEO of the National Association of Wheat Growers, also known as NOG, during a presentation at the Tri-State Wheat and Grain Convention that took place in Coeur d'Alene last November. Also from the convention, I'll have an interview with Kara Kalber, director of the Wheat Week program that is funded by the Washington Grain Commission, and an interview with Janet Walthew, a landlord from Seattle who leases her family's acreage to a well-connected tenant. Then we'll travel to Denver, where the U.S. Wheat Associates fall board meeting was held in early November. In an interview with Steve Wershing, a U.S. Wheat Associates vice president and director of the organization's Portland office, we talk about the river closure that began December 12th with a scheduled reopening of March 20th. But first, let's go to the Tri-State Wheat and Grain Convention in Coeur d'Alene, where Chandler Gould introduced himself.
I grew up on a cattle ranch, actually, in Texas, southwest of Fort Worth. My granddad was a county agent in the panhandle of Texas and attempted dry land wheat back in the late 70s and early 80s, and then he recommended not doing that, so he went on into the Extension Service. And then my dad worked for Geigy and stayed with them all the way up to the name change of Novartis, which is now Syngenta. My mother was a school teacher and also worked for the A&M Extension. So between that and ranching and some farming on the side, agriculture has always been a major part of my youth and current career. I've been in Washington, D.C. for 16 years. Please don't throw anything at me. I am not an insider. I don't like to look at myself that way. First of all, I'm from Texas. I live in Washington, D.C. I like to make that very clear, even though I own a home in Washington. I am from Texas.
Chandler doesn't just have an agricultural pedigree. He's got politics in his blood. He's worked for several congressmen and served as staff on congressional agricultural committees. This will be the fourth farm bill he's been involved with.
We're really going to start discussing what our blueprint is going to be for how we're going to move NOG forward to make sure that we have got the best hand that we possibly can to get the best farm bill as we start these debates. And I'm really expecting either the House or the Senate to start doing their hearings or listening sessions somewhere around March or April of next year. Now, it's going to take a little while to get the House and the Senate set since it's a new Congress, but we need to make sure that we as an organization and an industry are prepared to come forward with what do we think is best for Title I programs, where do we want to be for conservation programs, which are going to come under significant attack from especially groups like EWG, which crop insurance programs are working best for the wheat industry, whether it be geographically, whether it's whole farm, whether it's revenue, or whether we're looking at yield programs. And so y'all will be discussing this in your state meetings. It's very important that we keep this confidential. This is going to be our blueprint. And so I was thinking last night when we were sitting there talking about how to have this debate but not pass resolutions. And I was thinking about our conversation. And so I have a bad habit of waking up really early when things are on my mind. So about 5:30 this morning, actually someone called me from D.C., so it was 4:30 this morning because I forgot to turn my ringer off. I was sitting there thinking, how is the best way to describe to you why it is so important that we keep these Farm Bill principles confidential within our wheat family and within your organization. And I have to think into the game of chess. And it's not a chess of just me versus you. It's like me versus 15 others, wheat versus 15 other players. So any of you who watch the Big Bang Theory, when Sheldon decided to build three-dimensional chess, that's really what the Farm Bill is like. And so wheat's down here and corn's over here and soy's over here, but then you also have the House versus the Senate, and you have the Democrats versus the Republicans, and the administration all want something different. And if we come in and put our Farm Bill principles together and then lay them all down on the table and print them and send them around, then we have pretty much just...
I've also been through a few Farm Bill debates, starting in 1986, the year the Conservation Reserve Program was created. I particularly remember 1996 being a benchmark Farm Bill year. Remember Freedom to Farm? After the last Farm Bill debate, you'll get no predictions from me how things will turn out this year. Anything, and I mean anything, is possible. With the conservative Republicans in charge of the House and the Senate, it could be all about quid pro quo, nothing spent that's not offset. Then again, Donald Trump was elected with rural support, and he may feel differently about expressing his farming bona fides. Meanwhile, the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank in Washington, D.C., believes farmers can manage risk on their own and they don't need no government handouts. Perhaps we'll get into that another time. For now, it's important to remember that Washington wheat farmers have a motivated state and national organization, the Washington Association of Wheat Growers and the National Association of Wheat Growers alike. They are both committed to seeing that wheat farmers aren't left behind corn, soybean, and cotton interests. Coming up, Kara Kalber talks about Wheat Week. 10 years ago, the educational program Kara Kalber had been operating for the Franklin County Conservation District, called Water on Wheels, was running out of money. Chris Herron, a dryland wheat farmer near Connell, Washington, and a Conservation District board member, suggested she may want to try to approach the Washington Grain Commission for funding. But Kalber didn't think the fit was a good one. After all, the Water on Wheels program didn't even talk about wheat and only touched Franklin County students. But then, in a dream, the answer came to her. She would develop an entirely new program and approach the Grain Commission for funding. Wheat Week may have been born out of a dream, but thanks to Kalber's persistence and the Grain Commission's funding, it has become a solid reality. During an interview at the Tri-State Convention, I asked Kalber to describe Wheat Week.
One of the things that we really want to educate students on is the importance of dams on our rivers and the importance of using our rivers in a multiple use way. There's a lot of benefits for a lot of uses, recreational uses, irrigation, transportation, and the hydropower that's created on our rivers. So getting students to understand the importance of the dams on the river is primary. And then secondary is just conservation of our natural resources. You know, I work for a conservation district, and that's really our primary goal, is to help these students understand that their job is to protect and conserve these natural resources so that they'll last through their generation and on to future generations.
To be honest, I had my doubts about Wheat Week initially, but Kalber and her program have erased any misgivings. The $382,000 the Grain Commission provides to Wheat Week in its 2016-2017 budget is money well spent. I especially appreciate the fact that Wheat Week educators in the classroom hand out the Washington Grain Commission publication, Wheat Facts, to each student. And I'm glad the students are exposed to the factual information, but I especially like thinking of their parents coming across Wheat Facts as they clean out their children's backpacks at the end of the week. If you haven't seen Wheat Facts, we have it posted to our Facebook page. Go to Wheat All About It. I've also included a collection of the postcards that Kalber talked about Wheat Week students writing. Check them out at our Facebook page, and don't forget to like us. Up next, Janet Walthu, a very liberal landlord from Western Washington with a highly influential conservative tenant, a match made in Ritzville. Janet Walthu, a landlord from Seattle with more than 1,000 acres outside of Ritzville, has been coming to the Tri-State Wheat and Grain Conventions for several years. She finds the atmosphere inviting, and while she always makes new friends, she most enjoys reconnecting with the other landlords. I asked Walthew about her land holdings and how they came into her possession.
My great-grandfather, Jacob Bauer, was part of the Volga Germans that arrived in Ritzville in 1882. And they homesteaded the land. And then over the years, my grandfather, Henry Bauer, added to it. And my mother was an only child. And now the farm is a partnership among my brother and sister.
And I understand that you have an interesting a tenant on your farm.
Our tenant, well, it's Mark Chesler, and his family and mine came on the same wagon train, and his grandfather worked for my grandfather. And I'm a liberal Democrat, and Mark is a conservative Republican, and I trust him very much, and it works. It's a good partnership.
And where do you live now, Janet?
I live in Seattle, and I work in healthcare.
You don't see many landlords come to these events. Why do you come?
I come just to learn more about the industry and appreciate the government programs. I work in healthcare, so I'm very familiar with government involvement in healthcare. But to appreciate how complex it is with farming, there's always some takeaways.
Would you encourage other landlords to come?
Yes, I would. And we probably need to have a little mini group of our own sometimes, just because we have similar interests and we're trying to understand what's going on.
So what is your takeaway from this year's Tri-State Convention?
I think it's going to be the renewal or however the Farm Bill. Is whatever happens with that, if it's renewed or extended or changed. And then I'm, you know, still trying to understand the falling numbers.
As we all are. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think it's a great group of people. And I really enjoy our state organization and how everybody seems to know everybody and where their land is, and people are so friendly. And they're willing to answer questions. And nobody acts like it's a dumb one.
Yes, I have asked a lot of dumb questions over the year myself. Finally, in this first episode of Wheat All About It, Steve Wershing, Vice President of U.S. Wheat Associates and Director of the organization's Portland office, talks about the river closure we're in the midst of now, the value of the river to our wheat infrastructure, and why, thanks to fish biologists, he hopes that talk of dam breaching will become a thing of the past. Outside of a meeting room at the Marriott Hotel in downtown Denver, I asked Steve to explain the parameters of the river closure and why it was happening. Why are we having another one so soon?
Well, you know, when you ask for funding to make repairs and things like that from the U.S. government, they only give you a certain amount of money. They didn't fund everything that was really required and all the repairs that were required. So they've come back and given some additional funding to complete the repairs that are needed on the river to keep the locks in service for hopefully another 50 or 70 years.
Are there any differences between this river closure and the previous river closure?
Well, in the previous river closure in 2010, 2011, I think the industry and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, we all learned a lot during that closure. During that time, there was limited rail capacity, so that when the river was closed down, I think it was much more difficult on the industry to move wheat into Portland, Oregon for export. This time around, rather than just having two rail loading facilities or high-speed unit car rail loading facilities, we now have four. So we've had additional two constructed over the last few years. The McCoy Grain Facility in Colfax, Washington is an example of a brand new high-speed facility that's really going to help out, as well as outside Spokane, Washington, Highline Grain was recently constructed, which will also, I think, really alleviate some of the burden on growers and getting their wheat to market. And and having that extra surge storage down in Portland, you know, I don't believe we're going to lose any sales. The other thing that, as you know, is that's going on is because buyers know about the closure and they know that the river will be offline, they have purchased ahead. They have accelerated their white wheat purchases in anticipation of this closure, and hopefully trying to get ahead of it. White wheat sales are up 21% year to date. And I think that's in part because we're having a better year, but secondly, I think it's because buyers want to get ahead of the closure, want to get their wheat locked in and delivered before we shut the river down.
What does the closure mean for companies like Tidewater and Shaver? Do they essentially close down?
Well, when discussing this with them in 2010, 2011, essentially, they go into a much reduced activity mode. There is some business moving those barges around that have wheat in them that's stored, but they're not running up and down the river the same way that they would normally be. So they reduce their crews, they reduce the amount of business that they're going to do, and to my knowledge, they do undergo some financial hardship due to this extended closure as well.
As you know, there are environmentalists and others who would like to breach the dams on the Snake River. Do these repairs that are ongoing at the dams on the Snake and Columbia, do they add value to the river and make it harder to justify dam breaching?
I don't know if it makes it harder to justify dam breaching or not. I think those arguments need to be made strictly on their own. I think the dams have served us very well over the years. They've served the cities in terms of water and flow control and flood control. They've served in generating clean electricity and power, as well as they've served the fisheries, as well as transportation and logistics and the whole economy. They're an integral part of our supply chain. I think breaching the dams, hopefully, is an idea that's time maybe is starting to pass as we get better science involved with regard to the endangered species themselves.
I sure hope Steve is right. Well, that's it from the world headquarters of Wheat All About It. If you enjoyed the show, tell your neighbors, your landlords, and the associated businesses you work with. Better yet, teach your neighbors, landlords, and the associated businesses how to download and subscribe to Wheat All About It on their smartphones. Just as wheat farmers have adapted to new technology, we here at Wheat All About It are also adapting. This once-a-week podcast series can be found on iTunes under, what else, Wheat All About It, and also by visiting the Washington Grain Commission webpage at wagrains.org. And don't forget to visit the Wheat All About It Facebook page at, what else, Wheat All About It. Post your questions, accolades, and discouraging words there. Until next time, I'm Scott Yates, hoping you'll tune in again.
We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in good stead. Through a history of starvation and times of want and woe, a wheat has been our savior, our grub, our gruel, our dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when there's not enough wheat. We feed you.